Blog Talk Radio.
Good to be here with you. James Bostic, special edition of ACP. We don't normally go on a Wednesday night, but this week we are. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, just as we are tonight, this particular Wednesday, on Blog Talk Radio, here with Patriot Nation Radio Network. The reason we're on tonight, obviously, the big news today and has been for a week or so now, has been concerning Robert Mueller.
Bueller?
No.
Bueller?
No.
Mueller? Bueller.
No. Mueller?
Bueller?
Oh, my God. Anyway, you get the idea. So this was supposed to have happened last week. And it didn't, because apparently they needed more time to get their story coordinated between the Democrats and Mueller.
Bueller.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Bueller.
Right. So he comes in. He was supposed to go in last week. Didn't work out. And apparently, it looks like he could have used another week. This was, wow. This was pretty rugged. In this particular situation, with the type of witness that Special Counsel Mueller is. Excuse me. It went pretty much the way I thought it was. Number one, back in May, he comes out after, he's written the report. He's worked with Attorney General Barr, and they've come up with the final redacted version. And we've been through all this because, you know, there was some stuff that was still going on in other grand juries. Information contained in the report was still being investigated by grand juries that had been convened and hadn't really, they couldn't talk about it. So he comes in today, and the Democrats, this entire month, you know, we've talked about the story that back during Independence Day, during the week of Independence Day, the Democrats had one of the worst weeks ever, and we've chronicled that. But in the weeks that have ensued, the entire month of July has just totally sucked for these guys. There's nowhere they can go to get good press. They can't do it with the presidential candidates. They can't do it with the four horse-faced women of the apocalypse. They can't do it with Nancy Pelosi. They can't do it with Adam Schiff, as we saw today. They can't do it with Jerry Nadler. They can't do it with Bob Mueller. And they really, really, really wanted to do this with Bob Mueller. They really did. They were all in on him. They had put it all in there. And the way it worked today, Bob Mueller had a tough time, as we're going to see. He gets ripped apart by a number of Republicans, and I'm sure by tomorrow night's show we'll have a tally, if we don't already, of how many times he said, I'm not going to get into that, I'm going to pass on that, I'm not going to talk about that. A lot. A lot. He said it, and he said the same thing. He said those same things a lot to Democrat questions as well. Democrats are very receptive, lots of softballs, and the Republicans not so much. And what we're going to talk about tonight is, you know who, I'm afraid to say it, you know whose testimony during the morning session. Now, in the morning session, Counsel Mueller was there to speak with the, he was there to testify and answer questions from the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Gerald Nadler, and I think the ranking member there is Doug Collins from Georgia. And we're going to hear from Doug Collins, too. And so how it worked out, it's like the Democrats were his defense team, and the Republicans were the prosecutors. The Democrats set him up with lots of easy questions. They led him down the garden path. They laid it out for him, made it simple for him, and they still didn't get what they wanted. And we're going to take a look at that right now. The first guy I'm going to bring up is John Ratcliffe. Now, the Democrats, I didn't fool with them, because like I said, I do have Ted Lieu here for a couple of reasons. Number one, Ted Lieu, Democrat from California, asked questions that were illustrative of all the Democrats who asked questions, just variations on a theme. Where are you, Johnny? And so I did include his, but at the end of Ted Lieu's questioning of Robert Mueller, he made a surprising statement, and we're going to follow up on that right now. Not in any particular order, except for Mike Johnson from California, Republican from California. He was the closer on the Republican side, and he did an excellent job of summing up. So we will save him for last. First off, excuse me, I've got my earplugs in. I might do a little commentary on this. This is John Ratcliffe of Texas in his 5 minutes with Bob Mueller.
Good morning, Director. If you'll let me quickly summarize your opening statement this morning. You said in Volume 1 on the issue of conspiracy, the special counsel determined that the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. And then in Volume 2, For reasons that you explained, the special counsel did not make a determination on whether there was an obstruction of justice crime committed by the president. Is that fair?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, in explaining that the special counsel did not make what you called a traditional prosecution or declination decision, the report on the bottom of page 2 of volume 2 reads as follows. The evidence we obtained about the president's actions and intent presents difficult issues that prevent us from conclusively determining that no criminal conduct occurred. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him.
Now, because we really wanted to find him guilty of something.
All right. Now, your report, and today you said that at all times the special counsel team operated under, was guided by, and followed Justice Department policies and principles. So which DOJ policy or principle sets forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined?
Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah.
Which DOJ policy or principle set forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined? Where does that language come from, Director? Where is the DOJ policy that says that?
I invented that.
Let me make it easier.
Go ahead.
Can you give me an example other than Donald Trump where the Justice Department determined that an investigated person was not exonerated because their innocence was not conclusively determined?
I cannot, but this is a unique
situation. Time is short. I've got 5 minutes. Let's just leave it at you can't find it because I'll tell you why. It doesn't exist.
Right.
The special counsel's job, nowhere does it say that you were to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or that the special counsel report should determine whether or not to exonerate him. It's not in any of the documents. It's not in your appointment order. It's not in the special counsel regulations. It's not in the OLC opinions. It's not in the justice manual. And it's not in the principles of federal prosecution. Nowhere do those words appear together because respectfully, Director, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or to exonerate him because the bedrock principle of our justice system is a presumption of innocence. It exists for everyone. Everyone is entitled to it, including sitting presidents. And because there is a presumption of innocence, prosecutors never, ever need to conclusively determine it. Now, Director, the special counsel applied this inverted burden of proof that I can't find and you said doesn't exist anywhere in the department policies, and you used it to write a report. And the very first line of your report, says, and you, as you read this morning, it authorizes the special counsel to provide the attorney general with a confidential report explaining the prosecution or declination decisions reached by the special counsel. That's the very first word of your report, right?
That's correct.
Here's the problem, Director. The special counsel didn't do that.
It's all crap.
On volume one, you did. On volume two, with respect to potential obstruction of justice, the special counsel made neither a prosecution decision or a declination decision. You made no decision. You told us this morning and in your report that you made no determination. So respectfully, Director, you didn't follow the special counsel regulations. It clearly says,
What's wrong with you, Bob?
Report about decisions reached. Nowhere in here does it say write a report about decisions that weren't reached. You wrote 180 pages about decisions that weren't reached, about potential crimes that weren't charged or decided. And respectfully, by doing that, you managed to violate every principle and the most sacred of traditions about prosecutors not offering extra prosecutorial analysis about potential crimes that aren't charged. So Americans need to know this as they listen to the Democrats and socialists on the other side of the aisle as they do dramatic readings.
Socialist, good one, yeah.
This report, that volume two of this report was not authorized under the law to be written. It was written to a legal standard that does not exist at the Justice Department. And it was written in violation of every DOJ principle about extra prosecutorial commentary. I agree with the chairman this morning when he said Donald Trump is not above the law. He's not. But he damn sure shouldn't be below the law, which is where volume two of this report puts him.
Easy, Johnny. Easy. Yeah, exactly. And that was a running theme. That was something else I wanted to talk to you about, and I'm glad thank the gentleman from Texas for reminding me there. That was the running theme of the morning's testimony or the morning's questioning in terms of Mueller's testimony for the Democrats. And everybody, you know, they all usually had some kind of a preamble. Some wanted to get right to the meat of the thing. And either, if they didn't have a preamble, then they had some kind of closing remarks that they would make at the end of their time. And everybody watched their time pretty closely, and it went pretty smooth. But the common refrain on the Democrat side was, no one is above the law. Can you dig that? No one is above the law. Except Hillary Clinton. Well, okay, yeah. All right, well, no one's above the law except Hillary Clinton. What about Bill Clinton? Right. Okay, nobody is above the law except Bill and Hillary Clinton. John Brennan. Who? John Brennan. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, John Brennan. Nobody else is, you know, no one's above the law. James Clapper. Oh, my God. Okay. So, exactly. No one's above, and I guarantee you, I was talking with Gary Benford, our friend from Nation Savers 2018, about this. We were kind of threading back and forth while we were watching it. And he made the comment that all these Democrats, and to me, it's the most Democrats in one place at one time that I have ever heard say, no one is above the law. I didn't even know Democrats were aware of that concept. I didn't even know they acknowledged that doctrine. But today, for their purposes, during that hearing, they did. And it is going to come back and bite them on the behind. And that was what Gary Benford said. You know, it's going to come back and haunt them, because if we're talking about it now, scant hours after it's over, I guarantee you that the campaign strategists, the Republican ad people, the super PACs, the plain old regular PACs, they're all right now kicking around ideas of how they can use those sound bites and then pair it up with some left-wing Democrat kook that's either been found with a dead hooker or a live boy, and it's going to be on. So Ratcliffe just, you know, takes him to task. Mueller is dazed and confused. Now, who is it? Let me find him here. Doug Collins. Doug Collins was the first of the representatives, first Republican representative to have questions for you know who. I don't want to say it because I know where that is. So at this time, when he's talking with Representative Collins, Bob Mueller's just come into the room. He's just been sworn in. He's fresh. This is the first guy to jump in the ring with him. Doug Collins, representative, Republican representative of Georgia, Bob Mueller from today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we're moving, I know, understanding, just reiterating the five-minute rule. Mr. Mueller, I have several questions, many of which that you just answered will be questioned here in a moment, but I want to lay some foundation. So we'll go through these fairly quickly. I'll talk slowly. I will talk slowly.
Yeah, you do.
In your press conference, you stated any testimony from your office would not go beyond our report. We chose these words carefully. The work speaks for itself. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress. Do you stand by that statement?
Yes.
Since closing the special counsel's office in May of 2019, have you conducted any additional interviews or obtained any new information in your role as special counsel?
In the wake of the report?
Since the closing of the office in May of 2019.
And the question was,
have you conducted any new interviews and any new witnesses?
No.
Anything? And you can confirm you're no longer special counsel, correct?
I am no longer special counsel.
At any time with the investigation, was your investigation curtailed or stopped or hindered?
No.
No.
Were you or your team provided any questions by members of Congress of the majority ahead of your hearing today?
No.
Your report states that your investigative team included 19 lawyers and approximately 40 FBI agents and analysts and accountants. Are those numbers accurate?
And they're all Hillary Clinton fans.
40 FBI agents, 19 lawyers, intelligence analysts, and forensic accountants. Are those numbers accurate? This was
generally
included
yes.
In your report.
Generally, yes.
Is it also true that you issued over 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, obtained more than 230 orders for communication records and 50 pen registers?
That went a little fast for me.
Okay. In your
it's
report,
all going fast for
you,
Bob.
It's very simple. You did a lot of work, correct?
Yes, that I agree.
A lot of subpoenas.
Break it down
for me. A lot
of
pen registers.
A lot of subpoenas. Yes.
Okay, we'll walk this really slow if we need to.
A lot of search warrants.
Yeah, I think you're going
to a lot of search
this.
Warrants, a lot of things. So you're very thorough.
The what?
In your opinion, very thorough. You listed this
yes.
out in your
you
report, correct?
You understand the words
yes.
coming out of my
Thank
mouth.
You. Is it true, the evidence gathered during your investigation, given the questions that you have just answered, is it true the evidence gathered during your investigation did not establish that the president was involved in the underlying crime related to Russian election interference as stated in Volume 1, page 7?
We found insufficient evidence of the president's culpability.
So that would be a yes. That would be a yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Isn't it true the evidence did not establish that the president or those close to him were involved in the charged Russian computer hacking or active measure conspiracies or that the president otherwise had unlawful relationships with any Russian official? Volume 2, page 76. Correct?
I leave the answer to our report.
So that's a yes. Is that any true? Your investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with Russian government in the election interference activity. Volume 1, page 2. Volume 1, page 173.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Although your report states collusion is not so specific offense, and you said that this morning, or a term of art in federal criminal law, conspiracy is, in the colloquial context, are collusion and conspiracy essentially synonymous terms?
You're going to have to repeat that for me.
Oh, my God.
Collusion is not a specific offense or a term of art in the federal criminal law. Conspiracy is.
Yes.
In the colloquial context, known public context, collusion and conspiracy are essentially synonymous terms, correct?
Oh.
If no, on page 180 of volume 1 of your report, you wrote, as defined in legal dictionaries,
gotcha.
Collusion is largely synonymous with conspiracy, as that crime is set forth in the General Federal Conspiracy Statute 18 U.S.C. 371.
And
you said at your May 29th press conference and here today, you choose your words carefully. Are you sitting here today testifying something different than what your report states?
Huh?
Well, what I'm asking what? Is if you can give me the citation, I can look at the citation and evaluate whether it is.
Accurate. Okay, let me just be clarified. You stated that you would stay within the report. I just stated your report back to you. And you said that collusion and conspiracy were not synonymous terms. That was your answer was no.
That's correct.
In that, page 180
that
of volume 1 of your report, it says, as defined in legal dictionaries, collusion is largely synonymous with conspiracy as that crime is set forth in General Conspiracy Statute 18 U.S.C. 371. Now, you said you chose your words carefully. Are you contradicting your report right now?
Not when I read it.
So you would change your answer to yes then?
No.
Not when I read it.
Look at
no.
the language.
I'm reading your report, sir. It's
and
a yes or
page,
no answer.
Page 180.
Page 180, volume 1.
I wonder if Mueller's read his report.
Correct. And I leave it with the report.
So the report says, yes, they are synonymous.
Yes.
Hopefully, for finally, out of your own report, we can put to bed the collusion and conspiracy. One last question as we're going through. Did you ever look into other countries investigated in the Russian interference into our election? Were other countries investigated or found knowledge that they had an interference in our election?
I'm not going to discuss other matters.
That I yield back.
Oh, okay. That was his first round of questions from a group of individuals, from an individual in particular, Doug Collins, who is no slouch. Man, is he a fast talker. God bless. But he's a sharp character. And Bob Mueller was totally out of his element. Like I said, he hadn't been sitting in his chair probably more than 5 minutes after Jerry the Jowl made his comments and coming in and standing up, getting sworn in, sitting back down, opening comments, bang, right out of the box. The first Republican to ask him questions, he should have known was going to be rip-roaring and raring to go. And as we'll see from the next couple of clips, all the Republicans were. And of course, again, I said we've got Ted Lieu, and we're going to get to him in a minute. The next guy that I'm going to bring up, Jim Jordan, who we've used a lot of clips from Jim Jordan, Doug Collins too, as well as Devin Nunes and Matt Gaetz, John Ratcliffe, because these guys are movers and shakers on these committees, and they haven't been infected by Washington, D.C. yet. Now, at some point, they may, or they may not. You never know. They may be stand-up guys, and they may be able to get through Washington remaining stand-up guys. Who was it? Wasn't Mitt Romney. There's another Utah senator said it was impossible to go to Washington for any appreciable amount of time and return an honest man, and he may be right. But right now, these guys are on the ball. They're serious. They want to get to the bottom of this, and I'm hoping I've got him here. Let's see. Jordan and Mueller. And sure enough, we got him. Here he is. This is Jim Jordan. Now, again, all the questions that are being directed at Bob Mueller at this time that we're talking about on this show tonight are from the morning session where he testified in front of the House Judiciary Committee with Jerry the Jowls Nadler. Tomorrow night's show, we'll be looking in detail at the questions that were presented to him in the afternoon session, which was the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence with Adam Schifferbrains. So here's from this morning, Jim Jordan and Bob Mueller.
Director, the FBI interviewed Joseph Mifsud on February 10th, 2017. In that interview, Mr. Mifsud lied. You point this out on page 193, volume 1. Mifsud denied. Mifsud also falsely stated. In addition, Mifsud omitted. Three times he lied to the FBI, yet you didn't charge him with the crime.
Excuse me, Can you repeat 193?
Volume 1, 193. He lied three times, you pointed out in the report. Why didn't you charge him with the crime?
I can't get into internal deliberations with regard to who would or would not be
charged. A lot of other people for making false statements. Let's remember this.
Yeah.
In 2016, the FBI did something they probably haven't done before. They spied on two American citizens associated with a presidential campaign, George Papadopoulos and Carter Page.
And
Carter Page, they went
okay
to the FISA court. They used the now famous dossier as part of the reason they were able to get the warrant and spy on Carter Page for a better part of a year. With Mr. Papadopoulos, they didn't go to the court. They used human sources. All kinds of, from about the moment Papadopoulos joins the Trump campaign, you got all these people all around the world starting to swirl around him. Names like Halper, Downer, Mifsud, Thompson, meeting in Rome, London, all kinds of places. The FBI even sent a lady posing as somebody else, went by the name Azra Turk, even dispatched her to London to spy on Mr. Papadopoulos. In one of these meetings, Mr. Papadopoulos is talking to a foreign diplomat, and he tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. That diplomat then contacts the FBI, and the FBI opens an investigation based on that fact. You point this out on page 1 of the report. July 31st, 2016, they open the investigation based on that piece of information. Diplomat tells Papadopoulos, Papadopoulos tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. Diplomat tells the FBI. What I'm wondering is, who told Papadopoulos? How'd he find out?
I can't get into the evidentiary file.
I can't talk to you about that. You gave us the answer. Page 192 of the report, you tell us who told him. Joseph Mifsud. Joseph Mifsud's the guy who told Papadopoulos. The mysterious professor who lives in Rome and London, works at teaching two different universities. This is the guy who told Papadopoulos. He's the guy who starts it all. And when the FBI interviews him, he lies three times, and yet you don't charge him with a crime. You charge Rick Gates for false statements. You charge Paul Manafort for false statements. You charge Michael Cohen with false statements. You charge Michael Flynn, a three-star general, with false statements. But the guy who puts the country through this whole saga, starts it all for 3 years we've lived this now, he lies, and you guys don't charge him. And I'm curious.
Well, he's one of our guys.
Well, we can't get into it, and it's obvious, I think, that we can't get into charging decisions.
When the FBI interviewed him in February, FBI interviews him in February, when the special counsel's office interviewed Mifsud, did he lie to you guys, too?
Can't get into that.
Did you interview Mifsud?
Can't get into that.
Is Mifsud Western intelligence or Russian intelligence?
Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into. What's interesting, you can charge 13 Russians no one's ever heard of. No one's ever seen. No one's ever going to hear of them. No one's ever going to see them. You can charge them. You can charge all kinds of people who are around the president with false statements. But the guy who launches the guy who puts this whole story in motion, you can't charge him.
No.
I think that's amazing.
I'm not certain I agree with your characterizations.
Well, I'm reading from your report. Mifsud told Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos tells the diplomat. The diplomat tells the FBI. The FBI opens the investigation July 31st, 2016. And here we are 3 years later, July of 2019. The country's been put through this. And the central figure who launches it all lies to us. And you guys don't hunt him down and interview him again.
And
you don't charge him with the crime. Now, here's the good news. Here's the good news.
There is good news.
The president was falsely accused of conspiracy. The FBI does a 10-month investigation. And James Comey, when we deposed him a year ago, told us at that point they had nothing. You do a 22-month investigation. At the end of that 22 months, you find no conspiracy. And what's the Democrats want to do? They want to keep investigating. They want to keep going. Maybe a better course of action, is to figure out how the false accusation started. Maybe it's to go back and actually figure out why Joseph Mifsud was lying to the FBI. And here's the good news. That's exactly what Bill Barr's doing. And thank goodness for that. That's exactly what the Attorney General and John Durham are doing. They're going to find out why we went through this three-year saga and get to the bottom of it.
Time of the gentleman has expired.
There's really, you know, there's nothing he can say. And I think based on what we've heard now, I was coming to that conclusion the first time that I heard it. And he didn't write this report. He didn't write this report. He was a rubber stamp on this thing. Most likely, the guy that wrote this report is a dude, or the bulk of it rather, is a cat named Andrew Weissman. Mueller and Weissman have a longstanding association. They destroyed the investment company Arthur Andersen, probably contributed to the suicide of the president of Arthur Andersen at the time. They were running an intelligence operation against the mob where Whitey Bulger was one of their informants. And in order to protect Whitey, Weissman and Mueller let two guys wrongly convicted and wrongly imprisoned rot in jail for years. One of them died in jail. These are very, very bad people. Very bad people. We're down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to tell you what, I've already decided we're going extra innings tonight. So we will be back after this musical interlude with more of this special edition of Conservative Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We will be back right after this.
Too many nights in a roadhouse, too much wine, women and song. Too many days on the highway, then I run around all night long. I take a good look in the mirror, in the cold gray light of dawn. Too many nights in a roadhouse, run a little good boy wrong. Running with my buddies on the wild side, caused me a run of bad luck. Out all night with a roadhouse crowd, now I'm down to my last $2. Pushing way too hard, trying to live too fast, putting too many wrinkles on. Too many nights in the old roadhouse, run a little good boy wrong. Too many nights in a roadhouse, too much wine, women and song. Too many days on a highway, then I run around all night long. I take a good look in the mirror, in the cold gray light of dawn. Too many nights in a roadhouse, run a little good boy wrong. The blues come around when the sun went down, and my days didn't fare too well. I sure did want a taste of the good life till the good times come along. Too many nights in a roadhouse, run a little good boy wrong. Too many nights in a roadhouse, too much wine, women and song. Too many days on the highway, then I run around all night long. Take a good look in the mirror, in the cold gray light of dawn. Too many nights in a roadhouse, run a little good boy wrong. Too many nights in a roadhouse, just run a little good boy wrong.
Hey, Mr. Bartender, please don't be so slow. I got time for one more round and a six pack to go. Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I'm gonna be feeling low. So please, please, bartender, I want a six pack to go. I've been drinking all day long, taking in the town. I've done spent my whole paycheck just a honky tonkin' round. I don't have enough to pay my rent, I ain't gonna worry though. I got time for one more round and a six pack to go. Bartender, please don't be so slow. I got time for one more round and a six pack to go. Tomorrow morning, Sunday, I'm gonna be feeling low. So please, please, bartender, I want a six pack to go. I've been drinking all day long, taking in the town. I've done spent my whole to go.
I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning money. just the kind to fit my dreams and plans. Now the pace we're living takes the wind from my sails, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. While I'm losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale, looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing my weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
Now, if that ain't honky tonk, if that ain't country, there ain't no such thing. James Bostic here. Many of you people don't know this, but I am a retired honky tonk singer. True story. Really am. A long time ago, back when I wore a younger man's clothes, me and one of my buddies from high school that I had learned how to play music with, and his family, cousins, we had a band, and we toured the beer joints and the honky tonks here in southern West Virginia in the coal fields back in the early 80s. And you want to talk about barnstorming? We used to play this place about 30, 45 minutes from where I live now, down on the New River. What was it? It was called the Cameo Club. And then it burned down. It's they've had a couple different incarnations of the Cameo Club, but its first incarnation, we walked into the place on a Saturday night at 6:30, and there were already about four guys passed out at the bar. The tables and the chairs were these units like you'd see in McDonald's, where everything is screwed down to the floor. Oh, it was like Cowboy Bob's bunker. And then there was a door. It was built on the banks of the river, and there was a door that opened up the steps, and the steps just led down to the riverbank. So, yeah, somebody decided that they would get stand up and shut up confused, and out the door they went. Okay, well, we've taken up a lot of time, and we're going extra innings. At the risk, and if you feel that it's a bit repetitive, forgive me. But it's important that we see the thread of Robert Mueller's responses to all these different questions. And, you know, one of the threads in that particular tapestry of his testimony is, I'm not going to get into that. Can you repeat that? These cats only have 5 minutes. And if he can say that and play like he's the deaf old man, well, that sucks up their 5 minutes time, right? Yeah, I can promise you he didn't say, can you repeat that, as many times to the Democrats as he did to the Republicans, because he's being faced with uncomfortable questions. And he knows that he's going to get a lot of uncomfortable questions from Republicans. So it was a stall tactic. It was a sandbag. That old man can hear just exactly what the hell he wants to hear. I promise you. Looking through my list here. The next guy that we're going to bring up, we have two more Republicans we're going to listen to. One of them is Matt Gaetz, representative from Florida. The other one is Andrew Biggs, I think from Arizona. But first we're going to go with Matt Gaetz. You can see that the questions And when he says he can't go into it, he's answering the question. His silence almost screams the affirmative. Now, I could be wrong. I would, but overall, as we paint with broad brush strokes on this with these guys, and based on what we've seen thus far, I think we have the answers. Sometimes giving no answer in these kind of situations is almost as bad as giving the wrong answer. This is Matt Getz and Bob Mueller from earlier today. Now, again, all these that we're talking about tonight are from the morning session where he was testifying in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Tomorrow night's show, when we're back-to-back with Mark, I'm going to be talking about the afternoon session. And the testimony there was in front of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. That's Adam Schiff. Oh, God. Adam Schiff. Here's Matt Getz, Bob Mueller from today.
Director Mueller, can you state with confidence that the Steele dossier was not part of Russia's disinformation campaign?
No, as I said in my opening statement, building of the case was predated me and by at least 10 months.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Manafort's alleged crimes regarding tax evasion predated you. You had no problem charging them. And matter of fact, this Steele dossier predated the Attorney General, and he didn't have any problem answering the question. When Senator Cornyn asked the Attorney General the exact question I asked you, Director, the Attorney General said, and I'm quoting, "No, I can't state that with confidence. And that's one of the areas I'm reviewing. I'm concerned about it, and I don't think it's entirely speculative." Now, if something is not entirely speculative, then it must have some factual basis, but you identify no factual basis regarding the dossier or the possibility that it was part of the Russia disinformation campaign. Now, Christopher Steele's reporting is referenced in your report. Steele reported to the FBI that senior Russian foreign ministry figures, along with other Russians, told him that there was, and I'm quoting from the Steele dossier, extensive evidence of conspiracy between the Trump campaign team and the Kremlin. So here's my question. Did Russians really tell that to Christopher Steele, or did he just make it all up and was he lying to the FBI?
Let me back up a second if I could and say, as I said earlier, with regard to Steele, that's beyond my purview. Yeah.
No, it is exactly your purview, Director Mueller, and here's why. Only one of two things is
possible,
right? Either Steele made this whole thing up and there were never any Russians telling him of this vast criminal conspiracy that you didn't find, or Russians lied to Steele. Now, if Russians were lying to Steele to undermine our confidence in our duly elected president, that would seem to be precisely your purview, because you stated in your opening that the organizing principle was to fully and thoroughly investigate Russia's interference. But you weren't interested in whether or not Russians were interfering through Christopher Steele. And if Steele was lying, then you should have charged him with lying like you charged a variety of other people. But you say nothing about this in your report.
Well,
meanwhile, Director, you're quite loquacious on other topics. You write 3,500 words about the June 9 meeting between the Trump campaign and Russian lawyer Veselnitskaya. You write on page 103 of your report that the president's legal team suggested, and I'm quoting from your report, that the meeting might have been a setup by individuals working with the firm that produced the Steele reporting. So I'm going to ask you a very easy question, Dr. Mueller.
It was.
On the week of June 9, who did Russian lawyer Veselnitskaya meet with more frequently, the Trump campaign or Glenn Simpson, who was functionally acting as an operative for the Democratic National Committee?
Well, what I think is missing here is the fact that this is under investigation elsewhere in the Justice Department.
I get that,
and if I can finish, sir, and consequently, it's not within my purview. Department of Justice and FBI should be responsive to questions on this particular issue.
It is absurd to suggest that an operative for the Democrats was meeting with this Russian lawyer the day before and the day after the Trump Tower meeting, and yet that's not something you referenced. Now, Glenn Simpson testified under oath he had dinner with Veselnitskaya the day before and the day after this meeting with the Trump team. Do you have any basis, as you sit here today, to believe that Steele was lying?
As I said before, I'll say again, it's not my purview. Others are investigating what you
So it's not
addressed.
Your purview to look into whether or not Steele's lying. It's not your purview to look into whether or not anti-Trump Russians are lying to Steele. And it's not your purview to look at whether or not Glenn Simpson was meeting with the Russians the day before and the day after you write 3,500 words about the Trump campaign meeting. So I'm wondering how these decisions are guided. I look at the Inspector General's report. I'm citing from page 404 of the Inspector General's report. It states, Page stated, Trump's not ever going to be president, right? Right. Strzok replied, no, he's not. We'll stop it. Also in the Inspector General's report, there's someone identified as Attorney Number 2. Attorney Number 2, this is page 419, replied, hell no, and then added, viva la resistance. Attorney Number
Hell
2 in the
no.
Inspector General's report and Strzok both worked on your team, didn't they?
Pardon me? Can you ask?
They both worked on your team, didn't they?
I know. I heard Strzok. Who else were you talking about?
Attorney Number 2 identified in the Inspector General's report.
Oh, Number 2.
And the question was?
Did he work for you? The guy who said Viva la Resistance.
Peter Strzok worked for me for a period of time. Yes.
Yeah, but so did the other guy that said Viva la Resistance. And here's what I'm kind of noticing, Director Mueller. When people associated with Trump lied, you threw the book at them. When Christopher Steele lied, nothing.
Yeah.
And so it seems to be that when Glenn Simpson met with Russians, nothing. When the Trump campaign met with Russians, 3,500 words. And maybe the reason why there are these discrepancies in what you focused on is because the team
time
was so biased.
Time of the gentleman
the
has expired.
Pledged to
Mr.
stop Trump.
Jeffries of New York is recognized.
Wow. More stuttering than a Porky Pig film festival. It's, in a way, I want to say that it is sad, I suppose, in a way. This guy's, you know, had a storied career. He's been perceived and been lauded as, you know, a Dudley Do-Right, a stand-up cat. But as this investigation has unfolded, as people look more and more into the background of Bob Mueller, we find out that he's a dirty cop. Google Bob Mueller, Whitey Bulger. Same thing with Andrew Weissman. Check that out. Check out what they did with Arthur Anderson back in at the turn of the century there. This guy's lost. He's going in there and, you know, the name of the game is hum a few bars and I'll fake it. Fake a few bars and I'll strum it. We'll get through it. And now coming up, I've got Ted Lieu, Democrat from California. Also, not a particularly intelligent fella. And what we have to do on this clip, there's a lot of hub. And again, the reason I picked Lieu is primarily because of what Mueller says as an addendum to answering questions from Representative Lieu. But also because basically Lou's questions are illustrative, you know, of what every other Democrat said. All right, where are we at? Lieu, where you at, man? I know you're in here. But I put you in here. Don't make me take you out. Little grass shot. Here he is. Ted Lieu, Bob Mueller from earlier today.
I'd like to now turn to the elements of obstruction of justice as applied to the president's attempts to curtail your investigation.
The
first element
of
obstruction of justice requires an obstructive act, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'd like to direct you to page 97 of volume 2 of your report. And you wrote there on page 97, quote, Sessions was being instructed to tell the special counsel to end the existing investigation into the president and his campaign, unquote. That's in the report, correct?
Correct.
That would be evidence of an obstructive act because it would naturally obstruct their investigation, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Let's turn
now to
the
any
second
element at all.
Of the crime of obstruction of justice, which requires a nexus to an official proceeding. Again, I'm going to direct you to page 97, the same page of volume 2, and you wrote, quote, by the time of the president's initial one-on-one meeting with Lewandowski on June 19, 2017, the existence of a grand jury investigation supervised by the special counsel was public knowledge. That's in the report, correct?
Correct.
That would constitute evidence of a nexus to an official proceeding because a grand jury investigation is an official proceeding, correct?
Well, yes.
Okay. I'd like to now turn to the final element of the crime of obstruction of justice. On that same page, page 97, do you see where there's the intent section on that page?
I do
the
see
part
that.
C? All right. Would you be willing to read the first sentence?
And that was starting with?
Substantial evidence.
Indicates that the president's?
Yeah, if you could read that first sentence, would you be willing to do that?
I'm happy to have you read it.
Okay, I will read it then. You wrote, quote,
because, like, I don't
substantial
know
evidence.
So I haven't read
indicates that the president's effort to have Sessions limit the scope of the special counsel's investigation to future election interference was intended to prevent further investigative scrutiny of the president's and his campaign's conduct, unquote. That's in the report, correct?
That is in the report, and I rely what's in the report to indicate what's happened in the paragraphs that we've been discussing.
Thank you. So to recap what we've heard, we have heard today that the president ordered former White House counsel Don McGahn to fire you. The president ordered Don McGahn to then cover that up and create a false paper trail. And now we've heard the president ordered Corey Lewandowski to tell Jeff Sessions to limit your investigation so that you stop investigating the president. I believe a reasonable person looking at these facts could conclude that all three elements of the crime of obstruction of justice have been met. And I'd like to ask you, the reason, again, that you did not indict Donald Trump is because of OLC opinion stating that you cannot indict a sitting president, correct?
That is correct.
The fact that their orders by the president were not carried out, that is not a defense to obstruction of justice because the statute itself is quite broad. It says that as long as you endeavor or attempt to obstruct justice, that would also constitute a crime.
I'm not going to... I get into that at this juncture.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, that's one.
And based on the evidence that we have heard today, I believe a reasonable person could conclude that at least three crimes of obstruction of justice by the president occurred. We're going to hear about two additional crimes. That would be the witness tamperings of Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort.
All that, I yield back. The only thing I want to add is that I'm going through the elements with you does not mean that I subscribe to what you're trying to prove through those elements.
The time of the gentleman has expired.
Boom. That's the tell. Right there. Did you hear what he said? Yeah, I agree that these are the definitions. Sure, you're right. You can't argue that. It cannot be disputed. However, I am not on board with you when it comes to applying these definitions, what the president did, or in this case, did not do. Number one, people, at no time was this investigation obstructed. There is no one single example of this investigation being obstructed. Donald Trump gets mad, says he wants somebody to fire someone in a fit of pique. Maybe he did. But the person wasn't fired. Bob Mueller wasn't fired. Bob Mueller conducted his investigation uninterrupted, unimpeded, to the tune of a bazillion bucks and 2 years of circle jerking and blowing smoke. The president did absolutely nothing to intervene. To interfere. Plain and simple. No obstruction. Again, the last thing that he says to Senator Liu, yes, I agree that you have defined the terms, and I'm on board with you in terms of these are the definitions of obstruction. However, I can't go with you in defining what the president did using these terms. There you go. Guapo, hang on, buddy. I'm going to get to you. We got one last clip. This is the closer from today. Again, this is the morning session. Don't go anywhere, Mark, because we're going to talk. This is Mike Johnson, representative from California. And let me pull him up. And he's the closer. He's the last guy. And really doesn't ask, if I'm remembering correctly, doesn't really ask a whole lot of questions. Mother of pearl. Ah, okay. But sums up the morning pretty good. I mean, it kind of leaves a... Okay, Johnson... I think this is it. I certainly hope so. Here we go. Mike Johnson, representative from California, in summation.
You've been asked a lot of questions here today. And to be frank, you performed as most of us expected. You've stuck closely to your report, and you have declined to answer many of our questions on both sides.
Louisiana,
as a closer for the Republican side, I know you're glad to get to the close, I want to summarize the highlights of what we have heard and what we know. You spent 2 years and nearly $30 million taxpayer dollars and unlimited resources to prepare a nearly 450-page report, which you describe today as very thorough. Millions of Americans today maintain genuine concerns about your work, in large part because of the infamous and widely publicized bias of your investigating team members, which we now know included 14 Democrats and zero Republicans. Campaign finance reports later showed that team, that team of Democrat investigators you hired donated more than $60,000 to the Hillary Clinton campaign and other Democratic candidates. Your team also included Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, which have been discussed today, and they had the lurid text messages that confirmed they openly mocked and hated Donald Trump and his supporters, and they vowed to take him out.
That's me and
Mr.
you.
Mr. Ratcliffe asked you earlier this morning, quote, can you give me an example other than Donald Trump where the Justice Department determined that an investigated person was not exonerated because their innocence was not conclusively determined, unquote. You answered, I cannot. Sir, that is unprecedented. The president believed from the very beginning that you and your special counsel team had serious conflicts. This is stated in the report and acknowledged by everybody. And yet, President Trump cooperated fully with the investigation. He knew he had done nothing wrong, and he encouraged all witnesses to cooperate with the investigation and produced more than 1.4 million pages of information and allowed over 40 witnesses who were directly affiliated with the White House or his campaign. Your report acknowledges on page 61, volume 2, that a volume of evidence exists of the president telling many people privately, quote, the president was concerned about the impact of the Russian investigation on his ability to govern and to address important foreign relations issues and even matters of national security. And on page 174, volume 2, your report also acknowledges that the Supreme Court has held, quote, the president's removal powers are at their zenith with respect to principal officers, that is, officers who must be appointed by the president and who report to him directly. The president's exclusive and illimitable power of removal of those principal officers furthers the president's ability to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, unquote. And that would even include the attorney general. Look, in spite of all of that, nothing ever happened to stop or impede your special counsel's investigation. Nobody was fired by the president. Nothing was curtailed, and the investigation continued unencumbered for 22 long months. As you finally concluded in volume one, the evidence, quote, did not establish that the president was involved in an underlying crime related to Russian election interference, unquote. And the evidence, quote, did not establish that the president or those close to him were involved in any Russian conspiracies or had an unlawful relationship with any Russian official, unquote. Over those 22 long months that your investigation dragged along, the president became increasingly frustrated, as many of the American people did, with its effects on our country and his ability to govern. He vented about this to his lawyer and his close associates, and he even shared his frustrations, as we all know, on Twitter. But while the president's social media accounts might have influenced some in the media or the opinion of some of the American people, none of those audiences were targets or witnesses in your investigation. The president never affected anybody's testimony. He never demanded to end the investigation or demanded that you be terminated, and he never misled Congress, the DOJ, or the special counsel. Those, sir, are undisputed facts. There will be a lot of discussion, I predict, today, and great frustration throughout the country about the fact that you wouldn't answer any questions here about the origins of this whole charade, which was the infamous Christopher Steele dossier, now proven to be totally bogus, even though it is listed and specifically referenced in your report. But as our hearing is concluding, we apparently will get no comment on that from you. Mr. Mueller, there's one primary reason why you were called here today and by the Democrat majority of our committee. Our colleagues on the other side of the aisle just want political cover. They desperately wanted you today to tell them they should impeach the president. But the one thing you have said very clearly today is that your report is complete and thorough, and you completely agree with and stand by its recommendations and all of its content. Is that right?
True.
Mr. Mueller, one last important question.
I don't know what
your
the hell it says, but okay.
Your report does not recommend impeachment, does it?
I'm not going to talk about recommendations.
It does not conclude that impeachment would be appropriate here,
I'm not going to talk about that. That issue.
That's one of the many things you wouldn't talk about today, but I think we can all draw our own conclusions. I do thank you for your service to the country, and I'm glad this charade will come to an end soon, and we can get back to the important business of this committee with its broad jurisdiction of so many important issues for the country. With that, I yield back.
Mike Johnson from Louisiana. With us on the line, we've got El Guapo. He tuned in this evening, and we're happy to have him here. Mark Hoffman. Hey, Mark. What's going on, man?
What's happening, James? Great job tonight. Very much helped me understand. Because I was listening at work, and I didn't hear everything clearly, so I was kind of getting mixed up a little bit. I actually had said that Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz, oh, man, them guys dropped the ball. But then I listened to it, and no, they didn't drop the ball. In fact, they carried it and got a couple of first downs and almost scored.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this. Since you got to hear, and again, you know what? Yeah, I played all Republicans because those are the only guys that was asking any serious questions. And again, you see why I played the interchange between Bob Mueller and Ted Lieu.
Yeah.
Did this impress you? Did this guy impress you with somebody who knew what the hell was going on? Talking about Bob Mueller.
I don't know. Bob Mueller seemed like maybe somebody else wrote the report, and he never read it. I don't know.
Well,
that's the way
I'm leaning. And that's – no, there's nothing shocking in what you're saying, because
Weissman
that's ultimately the conclusion a lot of people have come to.
I think Weissman wrote the report, not Mueller.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
The pitfall.
I agree.
And maybe we need to get Weissman on the stand. Maybe we need to get him up there and put him out there.
It would be interesting to see what's going on with that. I know that I'm not exactly sure that it's connected to Mueller's testimony today in front of the House committees, but John Urban is wanting to talk with Christopher Steele now. And he's also wanting to talk with Joseph Mifsud, the guy that was part of that ring around people who were trying to, embed this craziness with Carter Page and pretend that he's the source for why we're going with this whole collusion thing. Mark, James Comey didn't think of this on his own. John Brennan at Comey SOB and Jim Clapper and Bob Mueller and those people who were embedded in the Clinton State Department and Bruce and Nellie Orr and Glenn Simpson, they didn't come together to do this thing for kicks. Somebody told them to go ahead. Somebody green-lighted this project. Now, there's only one guy that could have done that. And if he didn't want it done, I promise you, it would not have happened, but it did.
Right.
So logic inferentially tells us that the president at that time, Barack Hussein Obama Jr. the third, is the guy that's responsible for all this. Ultimately, it can't lead anywhere else And at some point after this buck has been passed around through all the various cabinet positions and the mid-level policy wonks at the State Department and throughout the Central Intelligence Agency and the upper mid-level people in the intelligence community and the FBI and even in the Department of Justice, we're going to find that buck stops at Barack Obama's desk.
Yes, I believe so too. And it was, there was something that you touched on during the show that I was, it was scratching my head the whole time. Is Democrats would ask their questions and they would have their little graphic with the little green check marks. And when they were done, they would say, and as you said in your report, nobody is above the law, not even the president. And that irked the heck out of me, because if that was the case, 90% of the Democrats would all be in jail today.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
nobody's
is that,
above the law.
How
except
is
Hillary
that
Flynn?
How did
oh, yeah,
Flynn and
one.
Manafort and all these guys get in trouble for lying, especially Flynn? Like, they really destroyed this guy,
yeah.
General Flynn. And, you know, he was only like Sean Hannity says, I think he fell on the sword for his family because he didn't want them to drag his family into it. So he said, okay, I'm guilty. And then he took the charges. How come these other people, the first thing I heard when I turned on the report today, the hearing, was that Mueller didn't know who Steele was.
Or Fusion GPS, yeah.
Fusion GPS, what do you mean, Fusion GPS? You don't know who that is? Huh? He lied. The first statement I heard was a lie. Are they going to hold him accountable for his lying to Congress today? Obviously, he lied numerous times. When do Democrats get prosecuted for the same crimes as the Republicans are held to? The double standard in this nation runs so deeply left, it's unbelievable. It takes me back to the Christian Saucier case, the sailor that was jailed for a year for mishandling 6 classified documents. At the same time, Hillary mishandled 150 classified documents. It's just, it goes beyond all comparisons that there is fairness and that the scales of justice are balanced, and that the scales of justice and law applies equally to all people. It has become clear to me and many of us that if you're a Democrat, you can pretty much do whatever you want. Now, this is something I said when Barack Obama was president. How do we expect anybody to obey the laws when the highest law enforcement official in the nation is breaking the law? So that's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and the same thing would go with the Department of Justice when Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch were there. How can we expect the nation's top law enforcement officer, if they're willing to break the law to the level that they did, and there's no question that they did, how can we expect them to uphold the law and enforce the law impartially? No, what we have now, I don't know if it's going to be changed, but what we have now is this two-tier justice system. That is, you know, if you look at it, there's a heavy thumb on the left-hand scale, on the scales of justice. And we're at this point, Mark, with this stuff that's going on right now, and with the things that I expect to see unfolding within the next 3 to 5 months, that's going to move one way or the other. It was like, you know, during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said, you know, the Union is not going to survive being half slave and half free. It's not going to happen. We're going to be one thing or we're going to be the other. We're either going to be all slave or we're going to be all free. And, you know, of course, we're talking about the house divided, you know, can't stand. And we're at a similar point. We're at a similar point in this country on a lot of levels, culturally, ideologically, politically, you know, all these things, they're all tightly interwoven and intertwined. And we're at this point where, you know, we're hitting critical mass. And all these things that are coming to light right now are going to prove to be the impetus for the rising. And we've seen it already. I talked about it on the show last night, the silent majority. And that's been a term that's been used for a long time. Nixon copped onto it. It worked for him. And it's these people. It's not necessarily you and I, because, you know, we were taking, you know, we took a look at things and we decided we had something we wanted to say about it. But there are a lot of people out there that they don't say anything. They don't post what they're thinking on Facebook. And you know why they don't. They don't put these things on their cars. They don't put Trump stickers on their cars. They don't wear MAGA hats because they don't want to be beaten. They don't want to have their car windows busted out. But they're there. And it's the same people that put him in office in 2016. And I guarantee you this, every single day that the Democrats continue on this path, they're losing voters. They're hemorrhaging voters like you cannot believe. I promise, there's nowhere the Democrats can go to get good press. Every one of their presidential candidates is going to go left. You know, they're going to go further left than the guy that just got finished talking. They can't, it's so early in the game now, they can't walk back to a middle ground, to a more moderate position, because if they do, they're going to alienate and further enrage the kooks that are running the Democrat Party now. So they can't get any good press there. They can't get any good press from the squad. The four horse faces of the apocalypse. They can't get any good press there. They can't get any good press from Chuck Schumer. They can't get any good press from Nancy Pelosi because she is irrelevant. She has no control anymore.
Yeah.
They can't get any good press with Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street. They can't get any good press with Antifa. Every Democrat city in the nation is on fire, basically. They're paying four guys $175,000 a year in San Francisco to walk around in hazmat suits cleaning up people poop. Democrats.
Crazy.
All right? They can't get any good press anywhere. And all this stuff's going to add up, Guapo. All this stuff's going to add up. And there are more Democrats that are looking at this stuff. When a national public radio poll says Democrat voters can't stand the agenda and the narrative that the Democrat leaders and their presidential candidates are going, you got problems. National Public Radio came out with that last week. No, yesterday. Or at least I saw it yesterday. It's not going to go any better for them. I just don't think it will. I'm not underestimating them. Who knows how many dead people in Chicago and all these other Democrat cities that are on fire that are going to be voting. We can't discount those guys. And they have a strong voter bloc with dead people. So, but when it comes down to this, I honestly think, and we can't slack up for a minute. We can't let go of, you know, we got to keep the pressure on. It's man to man, full court, all the time. And that's the way we have to stay. And that's the only way we can win. But if we do that, not only will we win, we'll win big, and we will win in places where that victory will mean a positive change for a long, long time.
Hallelujah.
I'm going to let you have the last word, buddy.
Well, we're in a turning point in this country right now. It's like you said, it's either going to go one way or the other. And I really think that folks are bailing on the Democrat Party in a big way. I've had folks from Walk Away campaign on my show, Latinos exiting, and Jews exiting the Democratic Party.
These organizations are gigantic. People are leaving in droves. Even if they win one state, I'll be surprised. I think that maybe there may be a record that beats Nixon's 49-state victory in 1968 or 69. I think it was 68 when he won 49 states. I think Trump's going to win them all. You know, I don't know. I can't see him losing anywhere. The squad has gone. The mod squad has gone. Which one's Link? Which one's Julie? I don't know. We have Link there. Link is there. Link is there. Linkette, huh? You know. And
that's a lot, Link.
You know, it's just going to be. I am excited. I don't want time to go too fast. I like living, and I'm getting older. So the slower the time goes,
yeah.
I don't mind. But I'm excited about what's coming. I think a lot of this is a deflection to distract from the Epstein case that is really going to tear up. And I think it's going to go through both parties. I think it's not just going to be beholden to one party. I think both parties are going to be.
I agree with that. It's going to be all across our social spectrum, all the elites. I don't think it's going to matter what side of the aisle. Yeah, universities,
doctors,
Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah. Republicans, Democrats. And I think that they're really trying to their main goal is to get rid of President Trump before they are exposed by the Epstein trial. And they are not going to stop. I think that the next step for them is we're going to go for this obstruction of justice, and we're going to run. We're taking this ball, and we're running. We're going to take everything they have, and they're going to try to impeach him on obstruction of justice. This is what I think.
They're going to fall.
I don't know.
I think they're going
Hallelujah.
To fall. They just had an impeachment vote this week with that crazy Al Green. The Wolf Man, as I like to call him, you know, and he this is the thing. I don't think that they're going to be able. They may try, and they may try again. You're probably right on that. But Nancy Pelosi has no control over the House.
Nope.
It's going to be like herding cats. She's not doing real well in terms of getting along with Chuck Schumer right now over their, you know, they tried to blame each other for the success of the border funding bill, because, you know, they were trying their damnedest to keep that from going through and to further exacerbate conditions on the border. And so Nancy's blaming Chuck. Chuck says, well, you need to get a hold of your caucus, squeeze them a little tighter. And so they're not doing now, obviously those guys on me and you were talking about it, but, Rachel Maddow's not talking about it. Chris Matthews, Lawrence O'Donnell's not talking about it.
Is Rachel Maddow still out there doing something?
Yeah, she's waiting. Apparently, there's some new evidence. There's some new bombshell evidence that's going to be coming out concerning the Russian collusion case that's going to be the end of the road for Donald Trump. Hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find that.
Is it going to be like her bombshell tax return?
Let me find this. Hold on. This is a great one. We'll go out. We'll probably go out with this if I can. There it is. Here we are, Mark. Mark Hoffman, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Mondays at what? Is it 8? You're on at 8?
8 p.m. Yes, sir.
8 p.m. Patriot Nation Radio live here at Blog Talk. Thursday night, that's tomorrow night, me and Mark will both be swinging for the bleachers back-to-back with ACP on at 7 Eastern time, followed by Mark Hoffman with Patriot Nation Radio Live. This is what we've been listening to for the last 2 years. I want you to draw it in. I want you to breathe deep on this, and I just want you to enjoy it and throw back your head and laugh.
Donald Trump's done. He's done. There's no question about that. He's done.
Breaking news.
A bombshell.
Today is a turning point. Today was historically bad for President Trump.
Today was a turning point.
A turning point.
We're at a turning point here.
The beginning of the end for the Trump presidency.
The beginning of the end.
And breaking news.
We have another bombshell.
Mike Pence might have to assume the office of the presidency.
The call for impeachment.
Rumblings of the word impeachment.
Breaking news.
Another bombshell out of the White House.
I believe this is the beginning of the end.
I do too.
It's really the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
He maybe is feeling the walls closing in on him.
All the walls closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
Breaking news, a new bombshell.
One astrologer says this means the beginning of the end for President Donald Trump.
The beginning of the end of the Trump presidency.
Trump will resign.
Trump is going to resign.
Is this the tipping point? I know we've said it over and over.
You think this is a tipping point?
And over and over.
This is a tipping point.
And over and over.
Breaking news, President Trump off the rails.
It was the beginning of the end today.
The beginning of the end.
It reminds me a lot of the last days of Nixon.
Breaking news tonight, new bombshell.
This is the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end.
The walls are closing in.
The walls closing in.
The walls closing in.
Breaking overnight bombshell.
This is a very dramatic day, and I think it might be near a tipping point. Do you think this is a tipping point?
This is unbelievable. This is remarkable. Have you ever seen anything like this?
His presidency is crippled.
December 1st, 2017, you can mark it down. This is the day that everything changed.
We begin with the bombshell.
The beginning of the end.
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 In fact, if this were a football game, we're in the third quarter. May even be the beginning of the end.
We begin tonight with the bombshell.
Donald Trump is in a lot of trouble.
Trump is in trouble.
The president will resign.
Another hour, another bombshell.
This is a tipping point.
Trump's going down.
This president could be impeached.
I do not think the president.
Oh, my God. We got a couple. There's a minute and a half more of it, but honestly, I can't do it. it's so funny because there are a couple of things I can equate this to. And for my generation, Guap, I know you're still here with me.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is the roadrunner. He's the roadrunner, and the Democrat Party and the establishment media and Hollywood and all these SOBs that hate him are collectively Wile E. Coyote, alleged super genius, and they've got their Acme bat suit on, and they can't
the
do anything.
The anvil's
going to
drop on their head.
You
and
know,
the anvil
and
soon
like,
will drop on their head.
Exactly. They're going to roll right off the cliff in their Acme rocket car. Or, you know, they're the villains in the pieces, as far as I'm concerned, and there's no objectivity here with me. The name of the show is A Conservative Perspective. So from my point of view, I look at all these guys as the villain. Just, again, that same collective that we call Wile E. Coyote, I can also look at them as Snidely Whiplash. And they have all these terrible things that they're going to line up, and they just delight in the potential of bringing harm or shame or, you know, attacking poor Barron Trump and all these people and doing all this stuff. And then, boom, something happens and Donald Trump comes out, and with one tweet, he drives them all crazy, and they're left going, oh, curses, it's do right. And they're foiled again.
President truly is a Jew.
It is. Now, we can't, you know, and we can ridicule it, but at the same time, we can't be complacent. Thank you, Penelope. We can't be complacent. And you know, the price of victory is going to be constant vigilance. We got to watch these guys every minute. We got to call them every time they step out of line. And we've got to be ready to push back whenever they start to push. That's all the time we've got tomorrow night. Again, Mark Hoffman. Mark, who's on the show tomorrow night?
I got Forrest Moriarty. He is from an organization called Purple for Parents. They are encouraging parents to get involved in their children's education. And we are going to make some serious revelations tomorrow about the education system and the sexualization of our children as early as kindergarten. All kinds of things. The National Education Association, Red for Ed, parading around as something good for parents.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to blow the whistle on Red for Ed and all this crap tomorrow. It's going to be a continuing series on education and what's happening in the education of our country. Well, it's very
looking
important.
Looking forward to it. Some very serious stuff. That's about all the time we've got. ACP will be here tomorrow night right in front of our buddy Mark Hoffman on our Thursday night lineup show. Until then, we'll be looking at things from a conservative's perspective. You guys take good care of yourselves. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Dixie.